Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rebel Rouse and Rich Burton.
Yo, the Tornado, Johnny Pentecal.
And I'm trying to guess about Mildred Taylor for tonight. I thought it was a go.
No shit. I've never met Mildred. I don't know if I've seen her fight before down in Philadelphia. But before I was even doing the Fight News Unlimited game.
The other Philly Box guy with the other Philly Box email, Mark Abrams there, was the one who was trying to set it up, but I've been trying to pin him down all day today, and said last night in the last email to me that I got, he said it was nothing yet, so I don't know. But we'll see. Maybe it'll materialize during the show here. They gave him two options, 8:30 or 9:15. So maybe we'll hear back from in that time period. But I also got a request out to Jimmy Quinlan, a fellow Massachusetts native like me. But unlike me, he was on The Ultimate Fighter. So he's going to be in a big event up in Maine. I don't know why the UFC didn't hang on to him. He's doing pretty good from what I remember. But anyway, he was set up with New England Fights. And they're trying to get a hold of him to get him on the show, too. And then there's Tito Ortiz for some torture. We'll be working on him. If you're a big TNA wrestling fan, you might have seen him hit Rampage Jackson over the head with a hammer the other day on their wrestling show. Knocked him out cold. I'm sure that was fake. But Rampage played a good dead guy, or past dead guy, I should say. Knocked out. Anyway, we got plenty of news to cover, and here's Tom, Psychic Tom. Welcome to the show.
All right, how are we doing?
Good.
My Rain Man status is in a little bit of flux after this past weekend.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I went over three.
Oh.
How often does that happen?
Had one of the most amazing shows in the history of that broadcast, I think. Absolutely unbelievable show. And I really didn't expect it. It's actually very pleased to see that they showed the first fight in this rematch that they had between Mike Mallo and Arthur Spilska there. Spilka. And actually, I had no idea when I tuned in that that was the first fight. I thought it was going on.
That's the same thought that I had, because the time was messed up. Because what, they have tennis or soccer or something?
I don't know. Some girly sport.
Yeah.
Anyway, they showed the first one, and I called my dad into. So there was an earlier knockout with the rematch, and Mallo unfortunately doesn't have a great defense, but. When he wants to get his offense going and he hits you, he can definitely rattle your brains a little bit. And both fights he did that. And what I was actually most surprised by, and I thought it was pretty interesting, the knockout happened. He crossed his legs and fell down. It was almost like it was choreographed. And then the count was going. It was like, oh, man, I just woke up from a dream. He gets up and just stands up just at the right time. But, he was still a little bit out of it, so they called it off. But I wouldn't think you either. But you got to work on the defense there. But Spilka, more speed than power. my whole card, but there was two other fights that Hello.
Hello?
Now I can hear you.
All right. Okay.
Start that whole thing over.
So the whole thing over?
Yeah.
He said, I like Mala. He's a tough guy. He's got a lot of heart. He's an exciting fighter. But he's never going to be elite. His problems are, you know, he doesn't have great speed. He has terrible defense. His skin splits right open. And as tough as he is, he doesn't. He has a decent chin, but he doesn't have a LaMotta end.
Right. And how about the other fights? I don't have the names right in front of me, but any of you guys remember the other fights?
Well, I remember the middle fight. We had the taller guy, and I thought Teddy Atlas was going to have a stroke. What was his name? Boy, you know what? But he was fighting a shorter guy who, you know, the old cliche, if you're taller, you want to fight tall. And he kept coming in close, and he was doing a great job on the outside. Then he'd come in close and get dropped. And the second time he got dropped, I thought Teddy Atlas, I'd never heard him quite that excited. He was screaming, what an idiot! And but the guy hung on and stopped the shorter fighter. Tony, do you remember the names of that middle fight?
Okay, we're back. Tom will probably call in again shortly, but he was asking if you remember the names on that one, Tony.
I don't. I'd have to look it up. I lost them, but I'm trying to remember myself.
That was an interesting fight, though. One guy that seemed to be winning in the early going, and it was all the fights really were sort of close. I think the middle fight was probably the closest until the end, but it was actually, I think, a body shot that ended the middle fight, if I remember correctly, or maybe that was the main event.
Let me take a look.
We'll find out in a minute.
There's
Tom.
Okay, I've got the names here. Adrian Granados is the one that won the fight. He was the taller guy fighting from the outside, and he was fighting an undefeated guy, Mark Salzer. And Salzer was, he's 15-1 now. He was 15-0 going in, and he got dropped in the second round. And let's see, then I think it was the fifth round, he got dropped again, the fourth round. And then in the sixth round, Granados came out and finished it off. But a very, very exciting fight. For the fact that Granados made it an exciting fight. Maybe he didn't fight the smartest fight, but it was very entertaining.
Right. And I actually even caught a little bit of the Saturday fight between Gill and Barker there, Daniel Gill and Darren Barker. And that was sort of a close fight, too, until it ended.
And, you know, it was funny. I mean, Gill put Barker down with a good body shot, and I'm surprised he beat the count. I thought Judge King was the one who was, and I know people that thought Gill won that fight. I don't see how. I gave Barker probably eight of those rounds. Playing the money for points of a knockdown. So I've had a few things with one line for like 115, 112. And it looks to be a generous deal. But people would be putting Keel on that fight. I honestly don't see how. I thought Barker clearly outworked him, especially in early rounds and then again in the late rounds. And that's my take on it. I knew this one guy, he was writing on Facebook, and he was from Australia, so obviously he pissed off that the Australian guy lost. But he's sitting there, oh, Barker didn't do this, and Barker, blah, 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 and he's like, tearing in. And the video was horrible, the judging was terrible. And I'm like, and everybody else, but a lot of people on there saying, no, I had Barker win. And then he'd get all pissed off, like, fuck you, you don't know what you're talking about, you're an asshole. And
hello. What happened?
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you, Rich.
There you are. You broke up there at the end of that.
Well, I was just saying that the guy was making himself look more like an asshole when he was, you know, getting pissed off that, you know, he thought Barker lost the fight. He thought his hometown Australian boy won. And he was getting belligerent about it. You don't have to be belligerent. State your opinion, and you're wrong. You know, the end.
Well, it is a case where you can't say it was hometown cooking because both guys are from different countries,
right.
In the United States. So.
Well, when I say hometown cooking, I mean this guy is rooting for his Australian boy, and pissed off that his Australian guy lost, and he's sitting there bitching and moaning about it. You know, to him, your guy lost. Face the fact, it's over. He lost. The end.
Well, actually, one person that recently complained about poor boxing decisions had a pretty entertaining press conference the other day. I sent you guys the link. Mike Tyson will be actually running the next Friday night fights next Friday in New York. And he actually did a pretty good job, I thought, other than a lot of too many F-bombs. He's a little like Dana White in that capacity, I guess. But it was kind of funny the way he was talking about, funny and enlightening, I guess, about how he was talking about, you know, the differences between him and regular promoters and how he gives the check directly to the fighter. And I thought that part was pretty, you know, the whole segment with him on the blog. FightNewsUnlimited.com if anybody wants to check it out, but I thought it was hilarious, and you know, it also showed that he is a smart guy. Somebody in the audience, one of the reporters, asked him about what he knew about Carmen Basilio, and sure enough, he outlined a lot of his different the fact that he beat Tony DeMarco, who we've had on the show before, and just I've met him several times. I actually drove him to an event at one point and got to have a whole car ride of his antics. But Mike is an interesting promoter.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
him. The funniest part, I thought, was when somebody asked him about, you know, why the fight was taking place, where it was taking place, and he's like, well, you know, that's where my partner was.
Yeah.
That's where.
Oh, Rich, what about the main event on Friday Night Fights? We didn't get to that.
Yeah. Kick out of that.
You remember we had the Polish kid out of Chicago, Andres Fanfara, fighting Gabriel Campillo. Remember that one?
I'm having a tough connection here. You're swirling in and out there, Tom.
Ah, okay.
Fanfara versus Campillo, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that found that one fairly interesting, too. It's the old former champ had quite a few good rounds left in him, but just seemed to tire out toward the end and get caught. But I was going to ask you guys what you think of the Polish kid.
Wow, he looked good. I mean, that was a fight that primarily displayed the difference between the European style of boxing with 1-2s and very solid defense and the American style of boxing, or actually every other region style of boxing, which is, you know, a combination of different punches and not so solid defense with, you know, sometimes you get your hands down and looking for deep. And I think Fonfara just looked like that style, that European style, was going to lose him the fight in the beginning, but it actually ended up winning him the fight because the other guy wasn't defensive enough. He was more offensive, and he just couldn't keep up that pace at times, and just wasn't strong enough to keep.
Yeah, I was impressed by the fact that Fonfara just kept coming, and you know, he seemed to make a few adjustments as the fight went on, because the old champ was looking very good. And Campillo was looking very good early on in that fight, I thought. I mean, just doing everything just perfect. But Fonfara unlocked the puzzle finally.
All right, we're back. Can you hear me, Tony?
Yes, I can hear you.
I don't know what's going on here, but it's getting pretty annoying. Anyway, what did you think of that fight, Campillo versus Fonfara? What did you think of the Campillo versus Fonfara fight while we're waiting for Tom here?
I was more ingrained in the big and the thing I'm with Campillo here, I think he was more like a one-trick pony, to be completely honest. You know, he basically got a lot of his, fanfare for the fact that he fought Morris Cloud so close in a fight that a lot of people thought he'd won. But he got completely destroyed by Sergey Kovalev just a few months ago. I mean, and he put a decent showing on there against Fonfara. Fonfara's a good fighter. I mean, he's got two losses, one of them via stoppage. But, he got dropped by Derek Finley. That was 5 years ago. And he lost the decision, a five-round decision, back, early in his career. And I think it was his fifth pro fight. So since then, he's won the table. I mean, not that former world champion Byron Mitchell in 3 rounds, put him down 3 times. He basically almost shut out Glenn Johnson. He stopped Conor Carpenter, who's a pretty good fighter. And now he beat Campillo. So he's moving up the ladder. That's what you would expect, out of a fighter like that. That's all you can ask for him. So he's making the progress. And I think Campillo is... I think he had that one shining moment against Tavares Cloud, who we also got to see by Bernard Hopkins, a rather limited fighter. And Kovalev destroyed him. I want to get back to Sergey Kovalev. I want to talk about Saturday, where your boy the Tornado, the supposed Rain Man of boxing, went 0-40. We already talked about the Barker-Neal fight. And I picked Gill to win that one, and he didn't. And I agree with the judges. I thought Parker clearly won the fight. We had Kovalev and Nathan Cleverley. And if you remember what I said last week, I said I really didn't like scouting report on Cleverley. Well, not much of a punch. He was a pretty slick boxer. Hometown. And for the first few rounds, it was close, and Kovalev threw a lot of punches. And by the third round, he was puffing pretty hard. And it's like, okay, Kovalev's running out of gas. You know, if Cleverley keeps us up one or two more rounds, Kovalev might be severely, completely spent. And next thing you know, down goes Cleverley. Third round, he got up and he put him down again. And, I mean, he was like, the referee was basically holding him up to get him to his corner for the fourth round. And then from there, Kovalev finished him in the fourth. I mean, put him out. And so now the thing is, was Cleverley overrated, or is Kovalev really that good? I mean, I know he's just a destructive puncher, you know, but the thing is, was Cleverley overrated? And now it's like Cleverley's talking about possibly retiring, not coming back. And now they're talking about Kovalev, depending on what happens in the Bernard Hopkins fight in October, fighting Bernard Hopkins. So then people are talking about, how does that fight match up? Would he be the man to put Hopkins out? Would he be finally the guy to knock Hopkins out? And then I saw some different predictions on it. One guy came out and said that he has a feeling that that if Kovalev sort of really put a lot on Hopkins and really getting to him, Hopkins might do something to get himself disqualified. But another train of thought is Hopkins generally feasts on guys that are straightforward, aggressive, slow-moving, plotting-type fighters, just as Kovalev is. And that's a potential possibility there. So, I mean, that fight's hard to predict. It really is. One thing I remember, and we were laughing about it, when Hopkins was fighting Felix Trinidad 12 years ago, and Hopkins was 36 years old, and everybody said, okay, this is the fight where he gets old. 12 years later, we're still watching him. But this is the fight that...
Even Blog Talk Radio lady screwed up tonight. Sounds a little drunk. Anyway. Yep, we are live. I don't know what's going on.
What was the last thing you heard?
You were in the middle of talking about... Yeah.
The quote, what he said was, when Trinidad started to charge hard and he's behind on the cards, it was, oh, he's starting to get to Hopkins. I don't know how much Hopkins has left. You know, he's an old fighter, and I don't know, he might be running out of gas. And did you guess who that quote was from?
What?
Guess who that quote was from?
No.
Who should be the last announcer to ever criticize a fighter for being too old in the ring?
I don't know.
George Foreman.
George Foreman. Good point.
Yeah, Foreman said that Arthur Hopkins is He's an old leg. I don't think he has much left in him. You didn't start your comeback and you were 2 years older than Hopkins was at the time of that fight.
Right. But George was a heavyweight, so a little bit of a difference there. Not much. And it was a different time.
It depends on how much at the same time you're killing yourself to make weight. Hopkins was a fighter that, especially at that juncture, was never killing himself. He was a guy that, to that point, he was actually 3 pounds under the weight limit. If my memory serves me correct, he weighed less than Trinidad.
Well, we got Tom back. Tom was trying to chime in a little while back on the Fonfara fight. What did we miss there, Tom?
Okay. Well, my only comment was that it was just looking so bad for him early on with Campilia just doing everything by the numbers. I mean, he was fighting flawless. And, you know, I know that it's hard to do that for the length of the entire fight, but it would have been so easy for Fonfara to get discouraged. I mean, the rounds were close, but he just was just a day late and a dollar short with some of those early rounds. But I was so impressed the way he kept at it and finally was able to get the key to unlock the puzzle. So see where he goes from here.
Yeah, I think that was the one that ended in a body shot where he was looking good and then, yeah, he must have broken a rib or something because I've never seen anybody go down from a body shot like that and then just kind of refuse to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that means a broken rib or, you know, just got the wind knocked out of him or just a series of body shots. In that fight, I don't think he really got hit with that many body shots, but that particular one seemed to land so hard and in just the right place.
That's what I was thinking earlier, that Fonfara was just, the footwork of Campillo was just so good, his lateral movement, that Fonfara was having trouble even trying for a body attack. It would have been hard for him to get it going, and he didn't even seem to be trying that much, but when he did, he made up for lost time.
Right. That was a perfect case of rope-a-dope, too, I think. He waited for his right moment, and he didn't really tire far up by any punch like the real rope-a-dope fight, but he definitely took everything Fonfara had and kept walking at him. So that was a good example of that. Anyway, we, of course, have to cover the big UFC on Fox 1 debut in Boston, and I got a little bit of bad news on the Boston front after that. But main event, Chael Sonnen versus Shogun Hua. Interesting developments after that fight. Looks like Chael Sonnen is going to be fighting Wanderlei Silva, but only if Silva is healthy for UFC 167. But in this fight against Hua, he ended up getting him in a submission guillotine choke in the first round at the 447 mark. 13 seconds left in the round, right up with the choke. And he looked pretty decent in that fight. I thought that Hua just had no answer for him. And I didn't think Chael had that much left in him. But, you know, I guess a little extra comes out of him when he's going up against a Brazilian.
Well, maybe it's more of a question, not so much of what Sonnen has left, but how much Hua had left or lack thereof, how much he didn't have left. I mean, to me, he's looked just a bit shop-worn, and I'm a huge fan of his. I mean, I'm not saying this in the wrong way, but as we know from decades of boxing, that there's only so much that a body can take, and Hua is only 31, but maybe 31 going on 50. I mean, he just, I don't know. He's got a lot of thinking to do about his career. I mean, I think he's 5-6 in his last 11 fights, I was reading. And it seems like since he came to the UFC, he's just not been the terror that he was at Pride. So I don't know where he's going from here. I mean, I'd hate to see him drop out of the top, drop out of the top 10 and then be just a gatekeeper. But that may be where he's headed. So.
Actually, Ninja Hua, his brother, or cousin, I think it's brother. He said that he's concerned about the people in Mauricio's camp and influences and just very shady people, I guess. So he was thinking that might have been a factor in his training leading up to this fight. But we did talk about last week how Hua had been training with Freddie Roach and supposedly was punching like Superman. So I was really surprised that he didn't throw a lot of punches or get a chance to really show off that improvement.
Well, it seems to me we've heard this for his last several fights that before the fight the training camp is good, the strategy is good, everything, and then afterwards all these issues come up. Well, it's hard to, I don't want to form conclusions, but you got to wonder about this. I mean, as a professional fighter with as much experience as he has, he knows the importance of a solid camp and the right influences. And if he can't get it, I don't know. Just don't know what to say.
And then, of course, we had a big upset in the co-main event. Travis Brown beat the crap out of Alistair Overeem by way of front kick and a bunch of punches. And that was also a first-round knockout. And Overeem got to be questioned at this point. I mean, obviously, people have to wonder whether, all his other leagues that he was in where he was doing so well, whether it was because he was doing the steroids under the radar. And because he finally got caught when he crossed over to the UFC, maybe he's just not the same fighter without that stuff. But I don't know. I think it's just...
To me, that was shades of Shane Carwin and Brock Lesnar in their fight. It just seems like he Overeem gave every possible thing he had, and is, I don't know if you caught the interview with Travis Brown afterwards, and I guess he had said something to the effect of his mind was okay, his body just was starting to shut down, and he heard the referee saying, "Come on, you got to move, you got to do something," but he hung in there, and all of a sudden, all the air started to go out of the balloon. Just reminded me a lot of that fight with Shane Carwin and Brock Lesnar. So, that's a good question. Where Overeem goes?
Well, this is his second loss in a row, right? So,
right.
I would think three strikes you're out applies to him, too, if it applies to so many other fighters in the past. And I think Dana White really doesn't have much of a fondness for him to begin with. So, we'll see how that works out, that whole situation. But I think Overeem really hasn't had that pushover fight yet in the UFC. Not saying that he should get it, but he hasn't really had any easy opponents or people that he matches up really well against. Even though he did start off pretty well against Brown, he probably is in need of a big confidence boost by putting him up against somebody that maybe the UFC knows he can beat, but still has a chance to pull out the case. If it is, then he's definitely.
I heard a few rumors about him and Mark Hunt. That would be an interesting interesting matchup.
Definitely. And I think they both have similar styles in some respects. I know Overeem, of course, but they both like to stand and punch. So, it'd be interesting. Then we had Faber versus Yuri Alcantara. Faber, by no surprise, won by unanimous decision there. That was a fairly interesting fight. But Faber is always pretty entertaining, no matter who he fights.
Yeah, that's one thing. You're just going to get 100% effort. I mean, he didn't let up. The guy's cardio is still off the charts, and he looked great.
And the knockout of the night, actually one of the knockouts of the night. I'm not sure. I think maybe Travis Brown got the other one. But Matt talked about him always being a threat, and you know, very, very tough, in-your-face type of fighter, and he took only 29 seconds to dispatch Mike Pyle. That was a pretty incredible effort on his part, and just looked nasty. Looked painful.
Now, my question to you is, what did you think of that interview after the fight, Matt Brown? Well, how did he word it? He said, yeah, well, you know, Mike Powell's better than GSP, you know. Oh, boy. Interesting interview, I thought.
Yeah, I think he's just jockeying for a title shot. I thought that was kind of a misstatement there, but, you know, he's just trying to hype up his own profile. And then we had, of course, Uriah Hall looking not so good against John Howard. It was a split decision win for Howard, but I thought he did enough to win. He probably should have won on all three cards. But I guess Dana White was really upset about the fact that these guys were high-fiving each other at one
point. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's... You know, at the beginning of the fight, that's good. Maybe the last round, I don't know, but you don't want to overdo it. And my notes were round two, boring and close, went to Howard. Round three, boring and close, Bickham, but probably Howard. Yeah, that was a letdown. I mean, not knocking Howard. He did what he had to do. He fought a smart fight. But Dana was so upset, I guess he came out and even said that Hall's not really a fighter.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because, you know, he had all kinds of praise for him during the Ultimate Fighter show.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the fact, he's just kind of losing faith in the guy because he's got a couple losses. But
yeah, because you remember during the show, it was, they said, oh, the most devastating knockout ever, and, you know, all that stuff, how Hall was built up so much. And I don't know.
Well, it seems to me he just hasn't had the right chance. He probably should be in a better camp, or, you know, he should be in a position where maybe if John Jones had been his coach, it'd be a whole different story because they have such similar stuff, but you know, Hall just can't put it all together. So maybe if he spent some time at Jackson's camp there with John Jones, we'd see a different Uriah Hall. But so far, I think he's just actually gone backwards in his progress rather than forward.
Right. That is a good point now that I think about it. And I don't think he should give up yet by any means, but I think he's just got to reevaluate everything from square one, and maybe a whole change of scenery would be the best thing for him. And there'd be a lot of places that would love to work with him, too. So we'll see how he goes.
And he kind of had a similar background growing up as Kung Lee, too. So... in that respect, I think maybe there's a psychological factor there involved. Maybe it's not so much that he's not built to be a fighter, but when he gets into fighting situations, his mentality is not too solid because he only got into fighting in the first place because he got bullied so much. So, you know, there's probably a psychological factor there that prevents him from, you know, executing to the best of his ability, all his moves and all his talent. And there's got to be something in there that maybe somebody can come in who's an expert with the fight science mentality or something where he can just get conditioned mentally to be prepared better to fight. But
I would agree because there's plenty of help out there. Home CDs and courses. I have this. I have the Grappler's Game Plan, and there it gets into creative visualization and guided imagery, all that stuff. Really working on getting your head right. So there's plenty of coaches too. So hopefully he can work on that area.
And then we had Michael Johnson beat up Joe Lauzon, unanimous decision. I actually did not see this fight. That was the one fight that. I couldn't get to play while I was watching it on the internet here. And I ended up having to reset everything and missed the hometown kid losing to Michael Johnson. And Johnson's been one of those guys from the Ultimate Fighter to sort of have his ups and downs in the UFC, but winning a fight with Joe Lozon is huge for him.
He looked great in that first round. He just was just lighting up Joe. That's my notes were really simple in that one. Joe was just lit up. And second round, Joe came back a little more, but I still had Johnson winning that second round. And I had Johnson in the third round. Joe just could not get off, to use an old cliche. It just was not his night. And he took quite a beating in the first couple minutes of the first round. I don't know if he completely ever recovered from that. Only he knows that. I didn't catch any interviews from him afterwards. So it has to be a big disappointment in front of the hometown. And this may be the last time it'll be in front of his hometown. I guess we'll get on that a little later. I don't want to cut the line here. I don't want to jump ahead and be a spoiler. But, yeah, I mean, congratulations to Michael, though. I mean, he did exactly what he had to do, but had to feel bad for Joe.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, Joe's in a unique position where losing two or three fights in a row because of his name and his history with the organization is not going to be a problem for him. I mean, they're going to keep him around until he retires at this point. He could lose 10 fights in a row, I think, and they'd still keep him. So he'll bounce back, I'm sure, and they'll find a good opponent for his next fight where maybe he can shine again. And it is tough to lose in front of the hometown crowd, but we've had guests on the show who talked about that. One recent guest actually talked about how it's actually sometimes worse to fight in front of your hometown people. So maybe that was the problem. But anyway, also had Michael McDonald beat Brad Pickett by submission triangle in the second round. That was a pretty interesting fight. McDonald's stock continues to rise there with that win. Haven't seen a lot of his fights, but this one definitely was entertaining from bell
to bell. And I would have to say that was one of the best jobs by a referee that I've ever seen. Because Pickett was really out of it in that first round, and the ref could have stopped it. It would have been a little controversial, but I don't think too controversial, but he let it go, and he gave Pickett every chance. And Pickett was, I had, on my notes, Pickett was stealing the round in round two till that triangle came. And Pickett was on top. He was controlling, but McDonald was very patient. And how old is he, 21? Oh, my God. What a future.
And then we had Conor McGregor winning unanimous decision over Max Holloway. I really didn't see much of that fight. Didn't really take any notes on that one. So,
well,
it's up to you to describe.
Conor, yeah, I think Conor has a lot of, he has that traditional martial arts style. And those unorthodox kicks are, again, they're flashy. And they can be effective, but not really powerful. And right from square one, he was showing Max moves that Max just, again, that cliche, he just couldn't get off. And the only thing I would say that I think that Conor could use a little more power punching. I think if he'd have settled down with his punches a little more, maybe he could have got him out of there. But and he also looked pretty good on the ground, too. And apparently he had got an injury of some kind. Said that slowed him down a little bit, and that's why he took it to the ground. But I think he won just about every minute of the fight. So congratulations to him. We'll see where he goes from here.
All right. In the preliminaries, we had Steven Seiler take out Mike Brown in the first round knockout. Mike Brown is a New England guy, of course, so sort of fighting in front of his hometown fans there. And not too impressive on his part, but he's kind of on the downside of his career, I think, since the WEC merger. He hasn't done so well.
Now,
but,
what did you think of the stoppage in that one?
I didn't see it. I didn't watch any of the preliminary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it was. I thought it was an okay stoppage. I mean, when someone's on their back and their arms are down at their side, I mean, I don't care if it's just for a couple minutes, your arms should, or just a few seconds, your arms should never be at your side when you're on your back and your opponent's jumping on you, hitting you. So, and Brown was so upset, he stormed out of the cage, he wouldn't shake hands, and Siler was getting booed, and I don't know why, but that's the way it went.
Well, like I said, Mike's got some connections to the area, so I think they're rooting for their hometown guy there. Kind of like Tony was talking about with the Australian thing. Even though they might have known he lost the fight, they were still upset. So, we also had Diego Brandão beat Daniel Pineda by unanimous decision. Again, I didn't see that one. Unanimous decision shows that it probably wasn't much of a competition there. And we had Manny Gambarian beat Cole Miller by unanimous decision. That's a surprise to me, Gambarian.
Well, now, again, a little bit of controversy in that one, too. I got to stand by my prediction. I think I was right, okay, because did you see what happened in that first round?
No.
Okay, well, Manny was pretty much out of it. And it was almost like the referee moved in to stop it, and Cole almost, I don't know what he was thinking, but it's almost like he held Manny up. I mean, you know, you keep going until the guy's finished. And Manny somehow survived and came back and got a decision. But really, you could probably Google it and see if they have that first round. But to me, it looked like the fight should have been stopped then. I mean, I know could have, would have, should have. But and apparently Manny was, he had to make a trip to the hospital, and Colt was out partying. So But I go into the record book, you know, that's the way it is. I'm justifying my missed prediction, okay? But I think my crystal ball was good.
So you're saying they should change the judging to reflect who was injured more? Whoever
yeah,
can party with the fight? Not all the Strike Force guys are out of their league in the UFC. He beat Cody Donovan there by knockout in the first round. Again, I didn't watch the preliminaries at all this time, so I didn't get to see that one. We also had James Vick beat Ramzi Najem by guillotine choke submission there, also in the first round. That was the first fight on the card. And overall, I thought it was a pretty successful event. And it's really too bad that the next piece I got to on the Boston City Council today passed a resolution, actually yesterday, passed a resolution that is actually, we talked about this last week, they tried to do this, but now they changed the bill. They've banned children under age 16 from attending MMA events in the state, or in Boston, I guess, without the supervision of a parent, so basically, if you're 16 and under, you have to have a parent with you to go to any future event, MMA event. Doesn't say boxing, which is interesting because usually these things are, you know, regulated under the Boxing Commission. So they've taken a particular stand against MMA in general. And, of course, they worded it in such a way that it's obviously targeted more at the UFC because they don't really even say MMA. They say alternate fighting in the bill, in the language of the bill. So this is obviously one of those culinary union deals where, you know, they've leaned on some of their supporters and some of their common interests and actually pointed to science. That says, you know, people who view aggressive and violent behavior, especially children, when they're exposed to it, they have a risk factor for an increase in aggression later in their lives, which I don't think has any basis in whether you can watch a fight or not.
Well, I guess we got to stop them from going to movies. We got to stop them from watching television. I mean, where does this stop? You know, I get so angry about this kind of stuff. I hate to think about it. Now, I think Dana's first impression would be, okay, you don't want us there. We won't be back. But have you heard anything about a possible court challenge of this?
I don't know. I don't think he would do that, but with the UFC.
Yeah, I think it's just his psychology that, you know, we're the big show. We bring a lot of money to the city, and hopefully this councilman that started the whole thing will be unseated next time.
Right. I don't know if he's what the process would be to overturn it either, but you know, it's not that bad. They were actually seeking to have anybody under 18 banned, period, from attending the fight.
Yeah.
So it's not as bad as they wanted it to be.
Well,
that's
true too, though. Yeah, when you think about it, I mean, if someone is under 16, they can't drive, so who's going to get them there? I mean, yeah, I can kind of see that it's not as bad as it's just the principle of the thing.
And of course, seeing the Friday night fight at the White Sox Stadium made me think, well, you know, too bad the UFC couldn't be at Fenway Park. Now that would be a pretty unique
mm-hmm.
experience. Or even a boxing
yeah.
match. I know they must have had them. I know they've had them before at Fenway Park, especially in like the 50s and stuff. But it hasn't been done for a while, but boy, that atmosphere was pretty incredible. And I'd love to see the UFC try to come back and do something like that. But this is going to be pretty tough for them to deal with. It's not as bad as it could be, like I said, but it just doesn't say much for the politicians in Boston that they'd kowtow to the union people and get something like this done purely out of spite. Because, I mean, if you look at it, their whole reasoning behind this about, you know, kids being exposed to violence, being violent later in life, well, there's nothing like cartoons and, you know, kids shows that have the same type of fighting in it, you know, that the kids are watching when they're even younger than when they watch the UFC, you know, that I've actually seen there's been studies done about shows on PBS that have violence and more importantly, not just violence, but a high incidence of violence against women in these shows. These children's shows designed for children. So I think that's a bigger problem if you really want to look at something like that as a reasoning behind banning an event.
Well, I'm sure the Pulmonary Union will be on the job and use their influence to get all that stuff banned too. So God bless the Pulmonary Union. They'll be on the job. We can trust them, right? We can count on them to preserve the morality of the youth of America. Mm.
And as I said earlier, another piece of news from this event, Chael Sonnen, of course, called out Wanderlei Silva. But then Vitor Belfort came out of the woodwork and said that he wanted to fight him. But then Vitor got paired with someone else. They're trying to set him up with someone else. I forget who it was, but I think I have it in here.
I think they were talking about Dan Henderson, a rematch of the Pride fight.
Right. Yeah, so it's the Battle of the TRTs.
mm-hmm.
The TRTs. We'll see how that goes. But Sonnen should be a pretty interesting fight. I actually would favor Sonnen in that one, especially considering, you know, the caveat being put on this fight. Dana saying that as long as Wanderlei's healthy, so, you know, he hasn't fought in a while. And it seems like whenever he's won fights, it's kind of been a big surprise, so. I don't know if he's going to be that successful in this comeback here to go against Sonnen. We know they hate each other, though, so that's a good start.
yeah.
I think their press conference will be a little bit more exciting than Tyson's, where he was asking for these guys to be mean to each other because there wasn't enough drama for him. Which one guy would say something about the other guy's mother or something? I mean, come on. But another strike, I guess you could say, against the UFC coming back to Boston. Dana White actually came out recently and has shown support for Alex Rodriguez after just last week, actually. It had to be a Boston pitcher, of course, who beamed A-Rod with a pitch. Didn't look to me to be that much of a, you know, purposeful throw at a guy. It looked like almost an accident, but I guess it was more the pitch before that was behind his back, so he was obviously trying to throw at him, but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like he really drilled him. It just kind of bounced off his leg. But anyway, Dana White has come to the support of A-Rod, and for a guy who has Maine and Boston roots, this is a big surprise, but he said, "I'm a friend of A-Rod's. I was diagnosed a couple of years ago with Meniere's disease, which is damage to the nerve, and A-Rod called me and said, I went to this place in Dusseldorf, Germany. Kobe Bryant sent me there. You know, you look at the list of athletes and people. Pope John Paul went there, and you have to be referred to this place to get in. He referred me to get in and completely changed my life. So for all the negative things that are on A-Rod right now, the guy has done some good things, too. I like him and have a lot of respect for him. So I guess that's kind of a personal issue for him because he supported him and he feels obligated to get his back, but it doesn't really say much about the steroid issue. We know Dana White kind of looks the other way on his own steroid issues in the league, and he's actually used the excuse for not using his guys that they'd be bagged for marijuana more than anything. He did.
Well, like he says, let the government handle it. That's the government's job. That's what they do. They're good at what they do. They're not doing Dane any favors, right? Yeah.
But, I know, supporting a Yankee, that's you know, if I didn't hate Dana White enough, that's just enough stuff to strike against him for me. A Yankee that's been tied up in not only steroid abuse, but lying about it, so... It's not very classy on his part, as far as I can see. But at least he didn't really endorse the steroid issue. He's clarified saying that it was about a whole other issue. So, yes. Lyoto Machida, we talked about last week, moving down. Now he's officially going to go down to middleweight. And he's going to fight Tim Kennedy in his debut at 185 pounds for... The Fight for the Troops 3, which will be on Fox Sports 1. So, pretty interesting development. I think they match up pretty well. Also, we talked about last week, Ben Askren is a free agent. And the Bellator people don't want him, which is very peculiar. And I saw a very interesting article on Bleacher Report about this, how... basically, they're saying that Bellator is completely hypocritical in their approach to the game, where they talk about, you know, they want the best fighters to go through the and they want the best fighters to be developed in Bellator. And this one article here by Jonathan Snowden over there, from August 21st, called Bellator Sports First Facade is a Lie, ready to let the best fighter go to the UFC. Not only are they ready to let him go, they're encouraging it. They're encouraging doing it right away because they don't want Ben Askren to sit around and about, you know, looking forward to Askren fighting GSP. Bjorn Redman said that. So he says, I don't think we're on offer at this point, so I don't see any reason to make anybody sit out. If Ben's going to go to the UFC, we should speed up that process so we can go fight. I'd love to see Ben versus GSP. But they do have matching rights, which is why they ended up back with Alvarez, Eddie Alvarez. So who knows whether they're dangerous there with this and trying to set him up for a fail. But I think... they're just not that thrilled with the way he fights. It's kind of like a situation with John Fitch in the UFC. They're not cutting him in this situation, but they're just not going to sign him because they don't like the fact that his fights aren't that exciting. And I also think they're admitting here that they don't have the depth to really challenge Askren either, which could be damaging to them in the future. I mean, for an organization that just signed a couple fighters that made a big deal about how the UFC doesn't treat their fighters right, you know, you'd think they'd want to show that, you know, they care more, a little bit more about all their fighters, especially the ones that are considered some of the best in the world. I think Bellator doesn't have too many fighters that are ranked in the top 10, and Askren is one of them. So it's very surprising.
You know, Rich, that is an original comment you made that I hadn't read anywhere else. And that is why people need to listen to this show, when you think about it. Maybe it's the lack of depth, and because he really hasn't lost more than a minute in any of his fights in Bellator. And as I was going through that, as I was thinking, well, is this a ploy? Is there some reverse psychology going on? But it never occurred to me that maybe that's why, that they need to get some excitement into their welterweight division, and they don't have any right now. Very interesting point.
And, we'll see. I don't know if GSP is going to want to fight him right away. I'm pretty sure they're going to probably put him up against a couple other big-name fighters before they decide to throw him in with GSP. But I would think with their common wrestling background, that would definitely be an entertaining fight. But Askren seems to be improving every fight, so who knows? Let's see. Getting back to boxing, I'm sure Tony's been banging his head against the wall and talking so much about MMA. We got Juan Baby Bull Diaz. He returned to the ring in his second comeback fight since he came out of retirement. And this time he fought Adelton De Jesus in Laredo, Texas. And Diaz was the aggressor and applied constant pressure with De Jesus' corner, waving the white flag, throwing in the towel at 1:15 of the fifth round. And also prospect Jose Ramirez beat Mike Maldonado in a junior middleweight fight on the same card. Ramirez scored 3 knockdowns in the first round before the referee waved off that fight. So the Baby Bull is back. Are you still with us, Tony, or are you asleep?
Almost asleep. Yeah. I was getting to see that fight. But I don't know how much Juan has left. I think Marquez really took a lot out of him. Yeah. I mean, I think the fight he had with Nate Campbell back in the day, that was in 2008, I think that actually kind of ruined him. And then Marquez really put the finishing nails in the coffin.
Right. Well, when you come back after retiring, it's usually not about money. It's usually about trying to make one more title run. So I would think that, he's probably treating this like a second career. I mean, he's going to take it slow. And if he shows at some point that, he's not capable of getting a title shot, he might retire again. But I think he's going to take small steps, short steps there, and baby steps, I guess you could say. Baby bull. Baby bull steps. So we'll see. In the long run, I think it's not something he's going to come storming back and trying to get a title shot right away. So he's going to pace himself. But this was a good opponent for him. He obviously took less than half the fight to win. So I think he'll be smart. We had also Takashi Miura defeated Sergio Thompson. Miura's 26-2-2, Thompson's 27-3. That was by decision on Saturday night in Cancun, Mexico. That was a close fight. It went back and forth and featured a second round and sixth round knockdown by Miura. Miura was later knocked down himself in the eighth round, but Miura did enough during the late rounds to win the fight. Final scores were 114-111, 114-110, and 113-112. So a little bit of news from the Mayweather versus Canelo card. Sounds pretty interesting. Canelo Alvarez has apparently been knocking a lot of his sparring partners out. I don't know whether that tells you something about Alvarez or more about his sparring partners not being up to the task. Pretty entertaining or intriguing fact going into this September fight. So I thought that was.
It can be a couple things. I mean, obviously, I don't know who he has in there working as his sparring partners right now. He's sharp. He's really physical, and he's not just physically but mentally preparing for this fight. Or it could be a fact that maybe he's overtraining. Maybe he's pushing himself too hard. And by the time he gets in there, he won't have anything left. Now, I know for this fight, the weight for this fight is 152 pounds, which Canelo is a natural 154 pounder. And so, this, I mean, people don't think 2 pounds makes much difference. But I know when I had to get to 165 and I was at 167, those 2 pounds sure as hell made a lot of a difference because I was so dry out. Now, they did the, it was last week, it was like the 4 week or 30 day weigh in. And Mayweather was right around 150. Canelo was 166. So that's 16 pounds right there.
Yeah, a big factor, I think. Mayweather might have bitten off a little more than he can chew, but, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to fight a completely different fight, not as aggressive as he usually is, or as he has been lately. Maybe he'll be a little bit more defensive like he has been in most of his fights, keeping his distance and just, you know, trying to stay away from that power hand of Alvarez. And the only thing is, you know, if Alvarez can back him into a corner and start banging away at him, you might see the first knockout of Floyd's career and the other end of being on the other end of the knockout. So, like I said, it could just be the sparring partners, but it's definitely an encouraging development for Alvarez. He's looking that good. He's knocking people out and sparring. Well, maybe he's just not going that 50% like you're supposed to. Who knows? I've been accused of not doing that myself. But, you know, as a professional, you're really not supposed to go all out in a sparring session because you don't want the other guy to go all out and knock you out either. So,
well, anyway. You work as hard and everything, but I know I've worked in there as kind of working as a sparring partner to help somebody. I live in college, helping guys get ready for, you know, regionals or nationals and stuff, or more nationals if I'd already been eliminated in the regionals. And we had a guy on our team my freshman year, and I was still pretty young, and he was about 24 years old. And he was a big country boy, and it was always like, he had no problem, like, you know, trying to knock out his sparring partner, but then if you started hitting him back, you'd bitch and moan. And he had no problem taking a cheap shot on anybody. So I remember we were about to spar, and he had his nose, you know, whacked pretty good in the fight. So the coach was letting him support his big, his headgear with a big bar across the front, almost looking like a football helmet in his life. Now, my nose had been bothering me, too. He comes up to me in his big country accent. Yeah, man, make sure you don't hit me in my nose, man. I said, yeah. You know, I'm working with you here. I'm trying to get you ready for nationals. And I said, I'm cool with that. But don't be taking any cheap shots on me. In the first round, we were coming out of a clinch, and he punched me square in the nose. It felt like my nose actually came off my face. He started pouring blood. So I cranked him with a good one. Yeah, man, you're not supposed to be hitting me in my face. I'm like, fuck you, asshole. You know? So it's like, I'm working easy trying to help him get ready, and he's trying to take liberties. Fuck that. I cracked him.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do, you know? I had a pretty interesting fight, one of my only fights in front of a crowd after I went to the Nationals in 98. I fought a freshman who was 30 pounds heavier than me in a Friday night fight that I set up at Norwich. And I said, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to fight to throw whatever you want. I won't hit you back. And, of course, the crowd didn't know this, but sure enough, he waited. He really didn't do much until that last 30 seconds, and I sort of put my gloves down and let him push me into the corner and do his thing, and it actually got me really close to getting knocked out, so I had to throw a jab at him just to get out of the corner, and, boy, he never let me forget that I broke my promise. But he really wanted to knock me out, so I had no choice. Anyway. Getting back to the real heavyweights, the real professionals here, or actually former professional, and Mike Tyson again. Boy, this guy is getting all the credit in the news. It's like he never had a bad history all of a sudden. Because actually, I don't know if you guys are Fox News fans or Fox Sunday News watchers, but he was the power player of the week I think last week or the week before, for the second time this year, which doesn't happen very often. So he was on that show, and now the Fox Sports Emmy Award-nominated all-access documentary series called In Being is going to feature him. It's an original six-part series. It premieres Sunday, September 22nd on Fox, and it will be either before or after the local NFL on Fox coverage. That's the 22nd. September 22nd, Sunday. And Mike Tyson's good buddy, Zab Judah, is teaming up with Golden Boy Promotions with his Super Judah Promotions. And that's another story. Judah's won 5 world titles in 2 weight divisions, but he still has plenty of goals left, including winning another championship and continuing to give fans more exciting fights. So Golden Boy Promotions is announcing a joint venture with Super Judah Promotions to co-promote Judah and make sure the world continues to see him on the sport's biggest stages. Judah says he's been doing business with Golden Boys for a number of years, working with them and against them. So he knows like what it's like to be on both sides. Through those times, he saw that they were a perfect fit, and this venture will give him the experience as a promoter and get him the fights he wants at this point of his career. Manny Pacquiao is opening a gym in Davao, wherever that is. Must be in the Philippines somewhere. But anyway, he says, I hope this boxing gym can help discover and develop the boxers here in Davao. And he also has gyms in General Santos City in Manila. And we talked about the UFC's Kennedy. There's also a Kennedy in boxing that's moving up the ranks. And on Saturday, August 24th, we'll see Teon Kennedy of Tony's great city of Philadelphia fighting Joselito Collado of Jamaica, Queens, New York, in a 10-round main event of the Grand Ballroom at Bally's Atlantic City. And that tops an 8-fight card, which can be streamed live on the Internet at www.pandafeed.tv. First fight is at 7:30 p.m. And that's a pelt fight card.
I don't know personally, but I've covered some of his fights.
So you think he's
going to
beat this guy,
Collado? I don't know much about the guy he's fighting. But Kennedy's a good fighter. I mean, you figure he's only, I think he's only has one loss. I don't have his record in front of me. That's Guillermo Rigondeaux. Not a bad guy to lose to.
Right. And as we talked about earlier, Hopkins is going to be fighting in October. He will be called this. Right. In a rescheduled championship event taking place Saturday, October 26th, also in Atlantic City at Boardwalk Hall. It's going to be a 12-round title fight, and it was obviously postponed from July due to visa issues that Murat had. And it's going to air live on Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, this doesn't really explain, but the visa issues are all cleared up. I don't even know exactly what caused the issues in the first place, but obviously he's figured it out. And it's going to be for the IBF Light Heavyweight World Championship, presented by Golden Boy Promotions and Caesars Atlantic City, and sponsored by Corona and AT&T. And you can get a ticket for as low as $25. They went on sale Monday. And let's see. You can go to Ticketmaster to get, even though this article says Tickermaster. I think they screwed up .com there. Vjakovic talked to this about this last week. I'm not sure we got it on the show, but I think after the show I sent you guys a picture. Vjakovic filed a formal protest regarding the final outcome of his fight last Friday night against Deontay Wilder due to illegal punches or claims of a punches that led to him being knocked out at 143 of the first round at Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California. Anthony Cardinale is Liakovich's advisor, and as I told you guys, he's actually a former lawyer for some mobsters in Massachusetts. And he actually was the representative for the witness in the Whitey Bulger case that died and made the news. Wasn't even anything to do with the Whitey situation, but I guess somebody that owed him money killed him by putting arsenic in his ice property. But Cardinale represented that guy, too. He was a victim of the mob, so of the Irish mob, anyway. But he was a famous lawyer here in Massachusetts for representing some bigwigs in the Italian mafia back in the 90s and 80s. So he somehow got into boxing, and he was probably most well-known for representing Johnny Ruiz. But here he's representing Liakovich, and he's filed a formal protest with the California State Athletic Commission. And he wants the outcome to be ruled a no contest. And I sent you guys the picture. Tony had some interesting insight on whether that was really a punch behind the head, but that's what they're claiming. He was hit behind the head.
I've been in the ring. I've watched a lot of sparring sessions. I've watched a lot of fights. And, first of all, you get a guy who plays a lot of. Now, that fight, that punch that you see on there, looks like it's kind of a right cross. And I remember, learning from Dr. Cox, you had the straight right, which is designed to hit straight, like almost in the mouth, and snap the head straight back. A right cross is more one that catches you on the side of the jaw, and its design is, as Doc would always say, to put your left side of your jaw on the right side of your face. Now, if you go back and look at one of the most famous punches in boxing history, the right hand that Rocky Marciano used to knock out Jersey Joe Walcott, that was a typical right cross and landed on Walcott's jaw. Now, just imagine if Rocky had landed a shot and Walcott was falling down forward. So if Walcott's slumping forward and Rocky throws that exact same punch, where is it going to land? Almost the exact location that picture is of Wilder. If you look at that, he's throwing more of a right cross, and Liakovich is falling, he's slumping forward. So a punch that would have been designed to maybe land on the cheekbone, the jaw, or maybe the eye, is now kind of landing on the on above the ear. But the ear, landing, like they said something about landing above the ear, well, that's legal. It can be dangerous, a shot to the temple, but that's a legal punch. Now, the punch Wilder landed was on the side of the head, almost right behind the ear, but I don't think it was a illegal punch. I remember one of my fights at Penn State against a guy named Billy Sansoni, and I had Billy hurt in the third round, and he was against the ropes. Now, I'm coming in, and I fire a right hand. Now, Billy saw it coming, and instead of putting his hand up to block it, he turned his head, and that punch landed on the back of the head, and he went down. Now, they called it an unintentional foul, so they gave him time to recover, but they didn't penalize him either because, they could tell that the punch landed like that because of him returning his head. So, part of the same situation we have here with Wilder and Liakovich.
Well, Liakovich says, I would have kept my mouth shut and said he was the better man. Everybody's going around saying nobody can stand up to his power, 29 knockouts and 29 fights, but any heavyweight would go down from a punch behind the head. That's why it's an illegal punch. There's nothing you can do when you get hit with a punch like that. Your body just goes wobbly with no balance at all. If he is allowed to continue throwing illegal punches like the one he hit me with behind the head, somebody is going to get seriously hurt. I can't allow him to get away with that anymore. But apparently he's undergone an MRI and some other medical exams, and he's 100% healthy. So just wants to fight changed. There's not a big concern about any serious damage from that. But apparently he said it's the punch to the back of the head that made him wobbly in the first place and led to the knockout. But he said, my career will not end on a fight like this that ended because of illegal punches. I will be back in the gym next week and plan to be fighting again in a few months. And back to boxing again here. Fox Sports 1 is not only friendly with the MMA scene in the UFC, but they've also set up a nice partnership with Golden Boy. And they have Golden Boy live fights on every Monday, Monday night fights. That's hasn't been done in a long time. So now we have the first event in the books, and the opening bout between Terrell Gosha and Austin Markham was in the super middleweight division, and Marcus was in way over his head. Gosha was seemingly landing at will with his power shots in the opening round. Gosha put Markham on his knees with an uppercut at the end of the first round, and he put Gosha put Markham away in the second round with a violent body head combination, leaving Markham writhing in pain. Referee waved off the fight, earning a TKO victory at 104 of the second round. And the co-main event was between Eddie Gomez, who's 14-0, and Steve Upshur Chambers, 24-2-1, in the junior middleweight division. Gomez came into the fight with three more knockouts on his record, despite having nearly half the professional experience of his own. And his advantage in power was evident immediately as his punches were snapping the head of Upshur Chambers' back, and a straight right hand by Gomez hurt Chambers on the ropes, put him on the ropes, and the fight was nearly stopped in the very first round as Gomez was hitting, landing hard combinations and keeping Chambers on the ropes. Gomez rocked him again in the second round and began to toy with him as his confidence increased. He showed off and toyed with him a little further in the third round. He turned up his aggression in the fourth and hurt him with a short left hook as he was charging. Followed that up with a right cross that sent Chambers reeling towards the ropes. Another combination followed, and Steve Smoker, even though this article calls him Steve Smoker, I'm pretty sure they mean Smoker, Tony's favorite referee, stopped the fight at 2:33 of the fourth round. And the swing fight was between Gary Baraguet and Kamal Muhammad. Baraguet was 1-0, Muhammad 0-1 in the junior middleweight division. There's a lot of clutching, grabbing, and headbutts in this one. Muhammad scored a knockdown in the first round with a short right hand, but it was more due to the fact that Baraguet was overly aggressive. And Baraguet came out aggressively in the second and scored an early knockdown that may have been caused by a headbutt. Baraguet spent the rest of the fight leading in with his head and throwing bombs from the inside. Both fighters were bleeding badly by the end of the fight, but Baraguet's aggressiveness won him the bout. Final scores were 39-36 across the board. And, of course, the main event was Danny Jacobs and Giovanni Lorenzo. Jacobs 25-1, Lorenzo 32-5. The middleweight fight. And Lorenzo's losses have all come against top-level competition, and he was never stopped in a fight. Jacobs started off the fight by outboxing Lorenzo and avoiding any wild exchanges. His jab was connecting cleanly, and Lorenzo's offense was not effective. Lorenzo got warned for an illegal blow in the third round, and Jacobs suffered a mouse on the left side of his face. Jacobs' own blood woke him up as he unleashed a wild flurry on Lorenzo and connected with a hard left hook, followed by a vicious right hook that sent Lorenzo face first to the canvas. Lorenzo was unable to get up, and the referee waved up at the 205 mark of the third round. So there you have it there. Pretty successful debut for Golden Boy Live. And even though it's a cable channel, it's not quite free TV or network TV. It's pretty encouraging that they're putting guys like that with those kind of records together on their card on a cable channel. That's not a premium cable channel, I should say. Sports Network. And we talked about the Friday night fights here. I finally got down to the notes with all records in it. A little too late, but it is what it is. Let's see. We get back to MMA here. UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones has gone the way of Ronda Rousey, talking about movie career, movie career future here. He's 18-1 as a pro, he's 26 years old. But in a recent interview, he said that he wants to model a professional acting career after Dwayne Johnson, otherwise known as The Rock, a former WWE star, who actually was he was recently quoted, John, saying that he's not ruling out a return to the WWE. They see it a viable option for him. Mentioned that specifically, his acting career on Johnson, and he said he liked the way he started off tough guy roles and then moved over to doing the Tooth Fairy. That's when you really saw that he could act, at Jones, and he's the one I admire and respect a lot. So I know I'd love to model my acting career after him. And Johnson is actually a real big UFC fan and friend of Dana White. He had his first mainstream role in The Mummy Returns back in 2001.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was it was actually not that long ago, 12 years. Seems like yesterday, but he's been in a heck of a lot of movies since then.
Yeah, because he was a champ at WrestleMania that year, and they had him on, I think, the Stone Cold team, and then after he lost, they did, like, a thing where like Vince McMahon suspended him or something. And that's why he was gone for a couple months. Then his first night back, was in Philadelphia, and they were all, and I was there, and they were all waiting for him to come back. And his window pulls up, and everybody, like, because at the time, it was during the invasion angle, so...
did you smell what The Rock was cooking?
Yeah. Well, Vince wanted him to come back to the WWF, and I think Shane and Stephanie wanted him to be with them at the WCW, and they were competing against each other. And his limo pulls up, and they all went to the limo, and he was like a prelim wrestler. And he's like, "Hey, everybody's coming to see me," and they all booed him. And then all of a sudden, he turns, and you see the Rocky statue, and then he's standing next to the Rocky statue, which was pretty cool.
Well, he's actually going to be in the same movie as clarified whether Rousey's going to be able to participate in that filming yet. I think there's a little bit of an issue there with her schedule. But she's trying. She's trying to work around it and get it set up. And hopefully they'll both be in the same movie together there. And interestingly enough, the whole Mummy series... I think one of the most recent movies in that theme featured Randy Couture as the villain. So, not just wrestlers going over there to that movie series. But anyway, Jones is ranked as the top pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And I'm sure Dana White will probably come out and say something about his ambitions in the movie scene, like he did about Rousey recently. If he gets closer to doing anything. But I haven't heard anything, no whispers whatsoever about Jones appearing in any movie, so I don't know where this comes from, but maybe he's just kind of hoping that the same kind of celebrity that came for Rousey when she came to the UFC is going to end up helping him out, too. Anyway. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but we didn't really get to the exact remarks. Dana White talking about Uriah Hall. He says, "I love Uriah Hall. I have great relationship with this kid. He's one of the nicest human beings you can ever meet. He's not a fighter, man." The way White sees it, Hall has all the building blocks necessary to become an elite fighter, but an inability to put it all together has stifled his potential. And here's the main remarks. He said, "If I could take Brad Pickett's brain and heart and put it inside Uriah Hall's body, holy shit, there would be some damage done. because Uriah Hall has all the physical attributes to be amazing. He's got speed. He's got power. He's unbelievable. He doesn't have what it mentally takes to fight here. You know what I mean? And that goes to kind of what I was saying about, you know, his bullying past. And it sort of reminds me of a situation that I was in when I was at the Air Force Academy. And I was in transition. They were throwing me out because I couldn't pass calculus. And so I had to go through the physical fitness test again and my whole process to stay there. And so I was doing the physical fitness test, and there was a kid that, I don't even know how he got into the Air Force Academy, because the kid couldn't do a single pull-up, and you had to get 9 pull-ups on the PT test to get in there. Nevertheless, he's in there, and we get through the basic training, we get to that part, and we're out in the field for 3 weeks in a place called Jack Valley. And this kid, he actually had like man boobs. He was so out of shape. And, you know, they got on him hard. We were at the obstacle course one day, and they have these guys with bullhorns running around picking out the weaklings and really making fun of them. And for this kid, they paid special attention to him. He got up right in his face with the bullhorn, and they started yelling, "Hefty, hefty, hefty," and making him say, "Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy." You know, we were all kind of trying not to laugh, but, you know, it got to be a pretty serious thing. And you know, this kid was very, you know, seriously afraid of these guys. And so what ended up happening was he went through the whole freshman year without really having any trouble. He never really passed the physical fitness test. And while I was going through my last test, he had to go through his. And this was his final attempt to pass the test, or else they'd throw him out. And he prepared for it, and, you know, I've seen the kid work really hard to get to that point, and, you know, I thought he was going to be fine, but lo and behold, he gets to the first obstacle, which is the pull-ups, and there's the guy that was with the bullhorn at the obstacle course months earlier. And so he had a complete meltdown. He couldn't get past 5 pull-ups, and the guy remembered, you know, the whole wimpy, wimpy, wimpy thing, so I think he even said something to him. So, nevertheless, I actually ended up out-processing with him, spending the whole day with him when I got my walking papers for not passing calculus. And he probably ended up at MIT, which he was first accepted to. And he's probably out there somewhere using his brain instead of his muscles to make it in this world. But that's the kind of thing, that, you know, one little thing like that, you know, one person or one situation that reminds you of a bad experience that you had, that traumatized you, can totally change, you know, even when you're prepared for a situation like a fight. You know, one little thing could jog you into a position where you're freaking out and you don't know what to do, or, you know, you're a fish out of water. So,
and you know, I've noticed this. I think the people that need help in that area the most tend to be the most resistant to admitting that they need help in that area. I mean, not just in fighting. I see it in the financial markets a lot. I think that, you know, when you're trading futures and options, and you're your own worst enemy. And I think that it's not just the market that beats so many people. It's their own emotions, you know, the greed, the fear, and we're all susceptible to it. And again, I've seen this again and again and again, that the people that need the most help just tend to say, "Oh, that doesn't mean anything." Well, it means everything.
And, getting back to Dana White's exact words here, his mental thing. He was this killer on software. Many shows is going to make your livelihood and everything else, and he turns into this different, this super nice guy. He's telling me after the Kelvin Gastelum fight, "I really like him. He's a really nice guy." Okay, well, that really nice guy just took everything you wanted. Do you get what I'm saying? Does this make sense to you? I guess it doesn't make any sense to him. So that's Dana White's perspective, but I guess it's just a matter of killer instinct. Some guys have it, some guys don't. I mean, you know, for a guy with knockout power and ability and skills, and, you know, not being able to put it all together is one thing, but not really having the aggression factor is a completely different situation. So he actually probably has 2 main problems. One being that, you know, he needs to have a smooth flow between the disciplines, between the striking, the ground game, and grappling and Muay Thai, all those disciplines. He needs to put all that stuff together, and he needs to have the mental capacity to go after somebody. You know, he needs to put it out of his head that it's, you know, you're going to be friends with the guy after the fight, fine, but you know, during the fight, he's got to be your worst enemy in a lot of ways. So doesn't mean you can't respect him, but it also probably goes to show you shouldn't be high-fiving him. That's not necessarily what's going to impress Dana White. And he did go on a rant about that, but we'll leave that out of the discussion for now. Anyway, as I said before, there was multiple checks given out for Knockout of the Night. $50,000. Matt Brown got one of them. And Travis Brown got the second one. So I was right about that. But in the final fight of the preliminary portion of the evening, Michael McDonald fought what this reporter here called the best fight of his career. And for his performance against Brad Pickett, he got the submission of the night. And the fight also got the fight of the night bonus, which doesn't happen very often. So that's $100,000 for McDonald's in bonus money alone. And Chael Sonnen also earned $50,000 as a second submission of the night. So this kind of goes along what I've been saying about, you know, if you don't want to increase fighter pay, then give out more bonuses. So I like what they've done here, and you know, rewarding some of these guys for particularly entertaining performances. I talked about this one earlier about Saul Canelo Alvarez knocking out a lot of his training camp sparring partners. And this, I finally got to the article. There's actually four sparring partners so far in training camp. And supposedly these are notable sparring partners, even though they didn't give their names. This article even says, if Canelo is knocking everyone out, that tells me Golden Boy Promotions has done a poor job of getting sparring partners that fight in the same style as Mayweather. Because Canelo needs a guy that stands there for him to get knockouts. We saw how Canelo couldn't do anything with Austin Trout last April, and he really didn't use a whole lot of moving in that fight due to the open scoring and the wild scores that the judges had. Canelo's biggest problem is going to be trying to take all that weight that he's put on. Canelo is heavier now than he was at the same period 1 month before his fight with Trout, and Canelo came into that fight at 172 pounds. He's going to have to take an extra 2 pounds off to get to 152 pounds to make the catch weight for this fight, and looking at that picture of Canelo this week at the 30-day weigh-in, I don't see where Canelo is going to be able to take off any additional weight. He already looks cut up. You're going to have to really dehydrate him to a dramatic level to get him down to 152 to make the fight, unless he's just going to blow off the catch rate and take the fine for coming in over the limit. So we'll see there. And Farnfara from the Friday Night Fights has kept himself in position for a title shot by defeating Campillo on Friday night. It was a good win for Farnfara, but the fight showed pretty clearly that he doesn't really have a complete game. He can't fight in reverse. He comes in, he covers up like a sparring partner when attacked, and he doesn't have a lot of power. Doesn't really say what title shot he's going to get. There's like 8 stories in here about in my notes. If I forgot that I had all those. Uh, We've talked a little bit about Dana White in the UFC competing with Bellator, or, you know, at least bad-mouthing him. I don't know if there's really that much of a competition, but Dana White has come out with some more remarks about the situation. He says, "How's your competitive spirit feeling? My video blog does more fucking viewers than their television show does. I'm not feeling very competitive." But this article actually questions that. He says, "White's video blogs are part of the UFC channel on YouTube, and they do make well over 200,000 views, but Bellator 97, which was the event where the promotion announced the Ortiz versus Rampage fight, averaged 697,000 viewers over the three-hour broadcast." So he's obviously exaggerating there. But Bellator CEO Bjorn Rebney sort of had a slack after announcing that they would do their first pay-per-view. And, of course, Dana White had to say something back, and he said, calls him Bjork instead of Bjorn. Because I saw that Bjork was talking some smack, and I was just like, shut up, dude, and run your business. That's over. You probably should have done that in the beginning when you had some legs to stand on. He needs to just shut up and run his business. They're hurting. I would say that's the advice that Dana should be taking himself. That would be no threat to you. We have to talk about it all the time. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Anyway, we discussed the news of Eddie Alvarez getting back with the UFC, or getting back with Bellator after the UFC fought over his contract. He's actually a Philadelphia native, Tony. I don't know if you knew that. He re-signed with Bellator. He's got a multi-fight deal. They put him up against Chandler right away in the pay-per-view event they'd been putting together with Rampage and Tito at the top of the card. And this is one of those things, that same article I mentioned from Bleacher Report called into question about, this claim that, you know, the championship format was going to make Bellator so different. And now here they are, you know, guy just gets back into the organization, they're throwing him right into a title fight without going through the tournament. And they're not going to put Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson in the tournament either. So it kind of makes you wonder where Bellator is going. Are they going to completely scrap the tournament format at some point? Or are they going to, you know, keep it in and, change the rules whenever they want to, or set up these title fights outside of the tournament in the future? Or is this just an exception because they're doing a pay-per-view event? I don't know. But Ben Askren is a pretty big bargaining chip in this whole situation. He's probably going to end up leaving for the UFC, but he's got some comments here in this piece. He says, I'm on the top of Bellator, and I'm ranked 15th in the world, and so I think every single person above me is either in the UFC or Strikeforce. And this is back in 2011, of course, when Strikeforce was still around. And he said at that point, it's just a matter of time. And at that point, Askren later told Bleacher Report that his bosses at Bellator were not pleased with that comment, but in relative terms, everything he said was true. If he wants to reach that level, to fight GSP, it would require a move to the UFC. And like I said, he's improved to just about every fight, evolving from just a plain wrestler to a full-fledged MMA fighter. But at the same time, he's been able to win most of his fights primarily by out-wrestling his opponents and just punishing him on the ground. And, of course, White had something to say about that style of fighting. If he comes to the UFC, those tactics will no longer work, he said. He says, you can't do that. You can do that in Bellator. It's going to be tougher to do that here. I see. Of course, Dana White has, I don't know if I talked about this last week, but it looks like I have it in this week's notes, so I probably didn't. I just talked about John Jones talking about making a movie career. We talked last week, I know, about Ronda Rousey saying she was going to retire in 2 years. And the movie situation could make it sooner than that if she decides to leave the UFC in MMA. But Dana White has a bone to pick with that whole argument. And he specifically says that if she does leave, she'd be leaving a lot of money on the table. According to White, he says that Hollywood is not going to pay Rousey or any other fighter as much as Zuffa will, which is why he's confident in saying that Ronda won't be retiring from the fight game anytime soon. And he says, there's no way in hell. I don't care what Hollywood offers. They ain't paying what we're paying. These guys, when they go out and make a movie, they don't make what we're paying. After her retirement plans were revealed, like I said last week, she was on Twitter defending herself against the backlash she received from a ton of disappointed fans. As far as the Twitter situation, White says, here's the thing. If you want to be on Twitter, get ready. Put your big girl boots on. Get ready because shit's coming at you. Anytime you're in the public with social media and the internet or anywhere else, people are going to say stupid shit to you. No matter what, it's going to happen. You can't snap and flip out on everybody every time they do. She'll learn that. She's still young. What she has to accomplish, what she has accomplished with the Olympics and the UFC and mixed martial arts, she's a workhorse. Just the load that we put on her, she kicks ass. She handles a lot of stuff. Everyone is going to have their moments when they snap and say, hey, fuck you, world, leave me alone today. You know what I mean? But those are the days you don't pick up Twitter and hit the button and you don't get on the internet. The only time you get smashed with that negativity is when you go there. So if you're having that kind of day, just don't go there. And, of course, William Morris Endeavor is the talent agency that Rousey's with, and they're one of the most popular and well-known talent agencies on the face of the earth at this point. Actually, that's the guy that runs that is the one that is Rahm Emanuel's brother, and he's actually the basis for the Ari character on Entourage. Ari Emanuel, I think his name is. So it's a pretty big deal, and he's a pretty ruthless guy that runs it and tries to get the best deals for his representatives as possible. And if Rousey connected with them, I think they could probably get her a better deal than the UFC could get her for a fight. You know, who knows with the sponsorships and all that. Like, you know, people say that GSP makes up to $9 million per. And maybe she's saying 2 years. Maybe she knows that after she gets a couple of these big-time roles in these movies, she's going to get a higher paycheck. And I just heard today that Ashton Kutcher gets $750,000 per episode for his television show there. So it's definitely possible to make huge amounts of money for very little work in the acting field. So we'll see. I think Rousey is going to not change her tune about retirement, but she might end up leaving before the 2 years that she's talked about. And talk about changing careers, actually not changing careers, but adding a new title. Vitaly Klitschko said he plans to run in Ukraine's presidential in 2015, challenging the incumbent Viktor Yanukovych. Dr. Iron Fist, as he is known, said that he's not going to plan to retire from boxing at the same time. So, very interesting. And I know that there's been some talk about potential signs of Parkinson's disease with Klitschko. So I kind of found that pretty puzzling. Because if you're, you know, dealing with health issues, and you're talking about changing, you know, going into politics like this, you'd think that maybe you ought to quit boxing for your own personal health and just for the fact that, you know, I don't know what their campaign is like, but if it's anything like the campaign system in the United States, it's going to take a lot of work to get into the presidential position there. But he has 15.9% backing for the 2015 election, which is most of any candidate, according to a May survey of 2000 eligible voters based in Kiev. So he's got a good shot at it, for sure. And here's one of the last stories I got here, actually the last story. Jason Mayhem Miller arrested again. And this time Apparently, it's for fighting with the victim of domestic violence here, I guess, fighting with her over a text message. And this story was all over the map. I guess the Orange County Sheriff's Department officials put out the wrong word about why he was arrested. They actually cited an old report from when he put his sister in a headlock at a party and refused to let her go. But this was a completely different scenario, and I just recently, right after the show last week, found the real story here. Apparently, the alleged victim was left with bruises on her limbs and face after an argument about a text on his phone. So I guess it's shades of Ocho Cinco there and his ex-wife without the headbutt. But some cuts anyway. That's pretty bad when you cut somebody up over a fight over a text. Actually, I think that's the same thing with Chris Brown and his ex.
Rihanna.
Yeah, same thing. So there's usually the stories about texting and driving, but I guess texting and dating is just the same. But he was released on $50,000 bail, and last time he was in the news for an arrest was in August of 2012, when a church pastor found him naked in a Southern California church. But that vandalism charge related to that one was ultimately dismissed. And he explained it away, and I guess it was blown out of proportion. But at this point, I guess we can talk about what's coming up. I know I've got in front of me the fight card for UFC Fight Night 27, which I think is next Wednesday. Next Wednesday. Oh, no. The 31st is Wednesday. So I guess we'll talk about that one next week because that's next Saturday, the 28th. But what about the next for boxing? Any big fights, Tony? You there?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't hear what you were saying. You were cutting out. Well, I'm going to fight tomorrow night in the Valley Forge. There's actually two local fight cards tomorrow night. We got the one I'm going to in Valley Forge, PA, and then there's one down in Delaware. One in Valley Forge will be interesting. A friend of mine, Kamara Paisley, on the card. He was supposed to fight a guy that we had seen last month. Excuse me. Oh, shit. Blow my brains out here. He was supposed to fight a guy we had seen last month, but when I looked on it tonight, it's a TBA on there, so I don't know what's going on. I'm going to message him when we get off the air. The one fight really going to be good. The original name was Naeem Nelson. Tall, slick fighter. Doesn't always put on exciting fights, but he was supposed to fight a guy named Ryan Belasco, and Belasco is always for a good fight. But I didn't see that on BoxRec tonight, which had me a little concerned. But the fight they just added a couple of weeks ago is the promoter's son, Marshall Kaufman, is the promoter, and his son, Travis Kaufman, is a heavyweight. Has one loss. He's a knockout puncher. He's fighting a guy by the name of Aaron Lyons. And I
All right, we're back. We got about.
Well, I'm seeing you doing this card tomorrow night. It looks interesting. I didn't see anything on Blackjack tonight about the Naeem Nelson Ryan Velasquez fight, but Nelson's 10-0, only one knockout. He's tall, he's got long arms. Velasquez 18-5-3. He's got 3 knockouts, but he's a very exciting fighter. We got Travis Kaufman is like Aaron Lyons. Like the Lyons is like the modern day Ernie Shavers. He just comes out there winning bombs all the time. I see Lyons is 12-12-1. I'm trying to see Kaufman's 24-1, 18-5.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 21560.
You're listening, Tom. We need you to connect if we're going to do all the time. So please call in. We'll get you to connect, and we'll finish up real quick here. Tony's phone is not connecting either, so major technical difficulties here. But
your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Anyway, we got 60 seconds here, so what I'm going to do is just run through the Friday Night Fights boxing card for this coming Friday, tomorrow night. We got the main event is Arginis Mendez, 21-2 of the Dominican Republic, defending against Arash Usmani, 20-1 with 10 KOs, who had a particularly rough decision against Rances Barthelemy in his last time on Friday Night Fights. He's a native of Afghanistan, now living in Canada, and the co-feature bout is Claudio the Matrix Marrero, who's 14-0 with 11 knockouts, also of the Dominican Republic, who takes on Jesus Queller, who's 22-1 with 18 knockouts of Argentina for the vacant WBA interim featherweight title. That's about it, I guess. Oh, here's Tom. Tom, I got you.
All right, back.
All right, well, I'm going to try to add Tony to see if he wants to conclude his remarks, and then we'll call it a night.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system, 2156.
Tony's out of range.
Okay.
Well, I guess that's up to you then. You want to drop any final thoughts?
Well, we covered it all tonight. I think we went through everything, so not much else to add.
All right, and there's an interesting little story here to end on. Not only did Mike Tyson put on an entertaining press conference the other day, but tonight, right up until we started our show, until 8 p.m., he actually did a meet and greet where everyone who had was able to show proof of ticket purchase was able to get a picture taken with him. So, I go out all the way out to Vegas and pay $300-something bucks to get a picture with him, and these people walk right up to him just showing a ticket purchase.
It's almost like just an amazing transformation here of his image, because you remember George Foreman from the early days, and then George came back, the bald George, the older George, and everyone loved him. And back in the early 70s, he was not a very lovable fellow. And it seems like Tyson's achieved this, and I'm trying to figure out how this happened.
Yeah.
Interesting topic for a future show. But
it was mostly a case of absence makes the heart grow fonder, because we saw basically the whole American heavyweight team drop off the map after he was out of it. And, Lennox Lewis was the champion for a few years, and then just became a Russian thing with the Klitschko brothers. So I think everybody not only missed the fact that there was an American heavyweight champion during Tyson's reign, but the fact that he knocked people out so easily.
Right.
He made so much money and brought so much attention to the sport, whether it was because of his dramatic activity outside the ring or, what he was doing inside the ring. But, I think just people like watching the guy, and
there was the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it was a spectacle. I mean, mm-hmm. regardless of how you felt about him, if he's fighting, I'm watching for sure.
Right. All right, we'll give Tony one last shot, and then we'll call it a night. Phone's going straight to voicemail for some reason.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for us.
That's
adios from me. Till next week.
Okay. We'll have some goodies for next week. Things are moving fast, so let's stay on top of it and out from here.
For guests, we'll
all
either
right.
have Jim Quinlan, Meldrick Kaler, or Tito Ortiz. We're really lucky.
Yeah. All of them look good. I'm looking forward to it. All right, bud. Next week, let's do it.
Adios.